The Lifestyle Show, presented by Selena McKenzie.
Now, our final guest today is going to be telling us about Milena and Margareta, who loved each other at the risk of their lives. We're talking about post-war, where lesbians were stigmatised and survivors kept silent. This book explores those silences and finally celebrates two strong women who never gave up and continue to inspire. To tell us about them from her book, welcome to the show, Gwen Strauss.
Thank you. It's an honour to be here.
So I was doing an interview actually just a couple of weeks ago about Ravensbrück, which was a concentration camp in the 40s that was built just for women, I believe.
Yes, that's correct. And Greta and Milena were two people who were there from pretty much the beginning of the camp, and Greta right through to the end. So she experienced Ravensbrück from its beginning to its terrible finish.
Yeah. Can you tell us about them both individually as people? First of all, Milena.
Yes. So Milena is kind of extraordinary. Milena Jasenska, she was, some people might know Kafka's letters to Milena. She's the Milena to whom he wrote those letters. Her letters to him were destroyed, but we have the letters that he wrote to her. And you can tell from his letters that she was quite something. She was a journalist, a Czech journalist, and she was the first person to recognize Kafka's brilliance, to translate his works, to support, to sort of champion him. They had a year or so of sort of an epistolary love affair. They met only twice, but because Kafka was the way he was, complicated and so on, they ended up breaking off, but they remained friends. And she was probably at his bedside at his death, and she wrote his obituary. She sort of championed him in the camp. She read from memory. She recited from memory Kafka's stories to the women in the camp at times. And she had been at the start of the war in Prague. She was an incredible resistance person, fighting to save. And she did save many lives, many Jews and others. She helped them escape Prague. And she sort of had a kind of a Cassandra-like clairvoyance before the war about what was coming and what was going to happen. And you can see them in her journal, in her articles that she wrote for the newspaper. Then she met in Ravensbrück. When she arrived, there was Margaret Böbe-Neumann, who was already there. And Margaret, or Greta, as she was called, was a German communist, had become very swept up in the Bolshevik revolution, was partnered with Heinz Neumann, who was the head of the German Communist Party. They were called back to Moscow by Stalin, and of course, as so many were, caught up in the purges, and he was executed, and Margaret was sent to the gulags. She spent 2 years in a Russian gulag before Stalin traded her to Hitler, and then she spent 5 years in Ravensbrück. So she's someone who really understood the concentration camp world of fascism and dictatorship of the last century.
Because Margareta, she was actually married, wasn't she? She was married to son of Martin Buber?
That's right. So she was married to Martin Buber's son, Raphael Buber, first. And that marriage fell apart when Greta became much more radicalized. She became sort of enthralled in more violent revolution, whereas Martin and his son Raphael were, I think, more socialist, sort of more pacifist. Martin Buber very famously wrote I and Thou, but he also fought before the beginning of the First World War. He spoke against the war and tried to get a sort of general strike so that no soldiers would sign up to go fight in the First World War. So he was more of that kind of person, whereas Greta became really, after, in that period between the two wars in Germany in the 1930s, there was a lot of tumult and a lot of, there was the end of the empire, there was the beginning of a republic, there was all these fights and strikes and riots, and she got swept up into that. And I think she was really charmed by Heinz Neumann, who was the head of the German Communist Party.
And how old were they both when they were in Ravensbrück?
Well, they both were In their middle ages. For the time, they were older, you know, and by our standards, not so old, but by the standards of the time, they were both in their 40s. And Milena had a daughter. Milena had already been married twice and divorced twice, and she'd had many lovers, including women. As I said, Greta had already had this whole experience in the Russian gulag. So they had pretty... when they arrived in the camp, they had pretty, you know, a lot of life experience already. They weren't like the young resistance fighters that I wrote about in my first book, who were all in their 20s. And I would say that when they arrived in the camp, they had the good fortune, both of them, of being completely fluent in German. Obviously, Greta was fluent in German. It was her mother tongue, but Milena was as well, and well-educated. And so they were able to... entered the sort of political, and they were political prisoners. So they entered that into some of the roles in the camp that were privileged roles. They were, Milena was put to work in the infirmary as a secretary, which was a good place to be. It was indoors. It was because it was near the Nazi doctors, you had to stay clean. So you were allowed baths, etc. And Greta was given a job overseeing some of the prisoners. So they both had in a way, privileged positions, and that meant they had a slightly better chance of survival than many women.
Yeah, it saddens me. I was hoping they were really young so they could still be around now, but I'm guessing they're not.
No. They didn't survive, no.
But did they survive Ravensbrück? Did they escape?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, so Greta did. Greta survived Ravensbrück. And she went on to write a book about Milena called Milena. And in that book, she says, I'm so glad I was sent to Ravensbrück because there I met Milena, which says at what point the strength of her feelings. She also says it at a point that Milena was the content of her life. You know, it's a beautiful book. It's kind of a love. It's like a long love letter to Milena.
And how long were they there? How long were they together?
They were there for 3 years, and Greta was there for 5 years. So in a way, Greta experienced the whole arc of the camp, because when Ravensbrück was built, at the beginning, it was built for women, as you mentioned, and it wasn't overcrowded. And there was this idea of reforming women, and it wasn't a concentration camp or a death camp at the beginning at all. It had much better survival rates than some of the other camps. But it did slide into total darkness and chaos. And it became, by the end, there were gas chambers that were burning up until almost the day before liberation. It was one of the last camps to be liberated. There were, you know, it became a death camp by the end of the war. In severe overcrowding, incredible, atrocious conditions, some of the worst crimes against humanity, things that were done to women's bodies. All of this happened, experiments, medical experiments. Ravensbrück went from sort of a semi-okay place to an absolute hellish place, and Greta experienced that. Milena began to experience that, but sadly she didn't live longer.
Yeah.
Maybe it's better she didn't, you know.
Well, you never know. The interview that I did, that I mentioned previously, that they were telling me about the Polish girls who were experimented on, and apparently they kept the gas chambers going because they wanted to destroy all the evidence.
Absolutely. In fact, that's one of the reasons that Ravensbrück is that sort of the least well known about. The Nazis, even when it was happening, were very conscious that there could be public outcry if people knew that this was happening to women in German camps, that on German soil. And so from the very beginning, they made every effort to hide what was happening in Ravensbrück and to destroy the records. And they were burning all the records up until until the Red Army arrived. Then there was this really deep effort to erase the memory of Ravensbrück. And add to that women who survived Ravensbrück were sometimes ashamed because it had a taint of if you survived that camp, you must have been a prostitute, you must have been raped. And, you know, so there was this idea that you were no longer a pure. So a lot of women who survived pretended that they hadn't been there, didn't talk about it, didn't mention it. It was kind of a little bit of a taboo subject. There were some survivors, some very famous survivors like Jean Mantillon and Geneviève de Gaulle, who really did talk about it, but there were many, many, many women who tried to erase it from their story. Which is why one of the reasons I think that Ravensbrück is not well known. It's only an hour north of Berlin. And it was the only camp built for women, and it was huge. It's one of the largest camps. And yet we know, you know, now we're starting to know more and more, but for a long time it was, even people said, oh no, there were no crematoriums there. No, there were no gas chambers there, but there were, you know, there really were.
Yeah, shocking. And Margareta, did she live to a good age?
She did. She did indeed. She lived into her 80s, I believe. I can't remember right
brilliant.
Now, but she did. And she went on to write. She became pretty adamant, you know, after the war, of course, Germany was divided, and she stayed in West Germany because she was an adamant anti-fascist. And if she had been sent to the East, I'm sure she would have been killed. Stalin would have had her killed. And so she, in a way, she was one of the voices that spoke about the gulags, because immediately after the war, certainly in France, where the left and the Communist Party had been so important and also the Russians had been so important in winning the war, there was this idea that the gulags didn't exist, that was an invention of the U.S. and the CIA or whatever.
Yes.
Goethe had been there, you know, so she had seen it. She knew that it existed.
Yeah.
And she knew also all of these people who had been executed by Stalin. And so she became a voice talking about that, and was sometimes had a hard time. People didn't like what she was saying.
Yeah, it really is shocking, these conspiracy theories. I remember watching one documentary. I turned it off halfway through, mm-hmm. but they were denying the gulags and the concentration right. camps, you know. And there are so many people that have been there and seen it. You know, they're not all imagining it. It's quite crazy.
Exactly, and you know, and she had lost her husband, well, her second partner to Stalin and the purges and all that, and she had lost so many friends. But and when she arrived in the camp, she was accosted by the communist political party prisoners, and they said, you must be a U.S. plant, you're a spy, you're a Trotskyist, you're lying. And that was what interested Milena. When Milena arrived, she heard this and she thought, I want to talk to this woman, because Milena had a real sense about the truth, and she didn't fall for these kind of obfuscating stories. So she actually sent a message to Greta saying, I'd like to meet you. And she basically wanted to talk to Greta about what she'd experienced. A real journalist.
Oh, wonderful. And a lovely love story. You mentioned your previous book, Gwen. Is that The Nine?
That's right. Yes. Yes.
And is that a similar thing? Is it history?
Yes. In fact, the Nine sort of led to this one. So The Nine is a true story as well, a nonfiction. But The Nine was the story of my great aunt, Hélène Podlyasky, who escaped from a Nazi labor camp with eight other women. A group of nine women escaped together and walked across the front lines of the war of Germany to find the Americans. And it's sort of the story of their, of that escape it took them 9 days, and there were nine women those days, trying to find their way across, this sort of no man's land and war going all around them. And, also a story about, they were all young in the resistance. So it was also talks about how they ended up in the camp. They all went through Ravensbrück as well, that group of nine women. And then they were sent to one of the, because at one point in the war, Ravensbrück became a kind of slave labor camp for Himmler to make a lot of money. So he and the SS would make lots of money by basically selling the labor of these women to all these different factories, like Siemens, like all of the German industries. And the nine women had been sent to a factory in Leipzig, where they were making weapons. So luckily for Margaret and Milena, they didn't get selected for those kind of camps. Those were very difficult and often deadly. You had to be very young and strong to survive them.
Yeah. They didn't want anybody who couldn't work for them, did they?
Right, exactly.
It's a hard one. Well, if our listeners want to find out more about Milena and Margareta, we're selling it now on our website. It's called A Love Story in Ravensbrück, The Nazis' Concentration Camp for Women, and it's by Gwen Strauss, who we're speaking to now. Gwen, do you have a website as well if people want to find out more?
I do indeed. GwenStrauss.com, I think it's
simple as that.
Simple as that. It might be. Yeah, I think that's it. I think it's GwenStrauss.com. I should know this kind of thing. thing.
I can tell you it is because I've got it here. I just wanted to hear you say it. Bless you. Well, thank you so much for joining us and telling us their story.
Thank you for your interest and thank you for speaking with me. It's been a real pleasure.
It's been a pleasure for me. Thanks for now. Bye-bye.
Bye.
TRE, Talk Radio Europe.